This is Look West, a podcast from California's Assembly Democrats.
For decades, people have been displaced in the name of development. Hi, I'm Henry Lowe with Look West. Many times, the displaced were people of color that were pushed out of their homes with little or no compensation. Central Park in New York City and downtown Palm Springs in California are just two examples of communities of color being shoved aside in the name of development. In the 1950s, nearly 1,800 people were displaced for what they thought was going to be a housing project, but instead became Dodger Stadium. Assemblywoman Wendy Carrillo is asking the state to create a task force to look into reparations for the people forced out of Chavez Ravine. I talked with her about her legislation, AB 1950, and I asked her, how does it fit with the broader conversation of displacement in the name of development?
So there is a very real historical account across the United States, but certainly in California, of communities of color being displaced to either build different communities or to build freeways. Palm Springs is an example of that. The Sugar Hill community in Los Angeles is an example of that was destroyed by the freeway as well. The communities on the east side, Boyle Heights and neighboring communities, beautiful communities, were also destroyed because of building of freeways across Southern California and specifically in Los Angeles. What happened to the communities in La Loma, Bishop, and Palo Verde, which have now been known as Chavez Ravine, was that there was actually, through the Los Angeles Housing Authority, an effort to create what would be the Elysian Parks Housing Project, which had been federally funded by the federal government to create affordable housing. And community was called a community with very low means. It was called a slum. And folks were, their property, they were able to sell their property at very low cost. But after an election in 1953, when a very pro-housing mayor was taken out of office, in turn, a guy by the name of Norris Polson ran for office against public housing. And this was in the middle, like historical, you look at a time, this was against like the Red Scare. It was like anti-communism, all of these anti-socialists. Kind of history repeats itself. And so an election has consequences. And so with a new mayor being elected, that housing development was squashed. And so at the very end of that tumultuous time, very few people remained and then were forcibly evicted through eminent domain by the city of Los Angeles. And so hundreds of families lost their homes. But, you know, what was then called a slum was actually a thriving community. There were schools and a supermarket, and people were living and thriving, and it was predominantly Mexican-American, but there were also Italians and Asians and a diversity of folks living on the east side in these three communities that were wrongfully displaced, and a promise of housing that was made that was actually never fulfilled. And quite honestly, when I talk to folks about what happened in these communities, which is now Dodger Stadium, a lot of people are shocked that they don't know. They didn't realize that this has happened. And so in many ways, we are, you know, peeling away the onion of injustice and ensuring that this history, this very Mexican-American, Chicano, Latino, Los Angeles story and California story is known beyond these three communities and is known as, you know, this is what happens when government comes in through eminent domain and takes land. And then, you know, there are others that benefit from it. But now, decades later, we're able to bring that injustice to light. And so this piece of legislation, the Chavez Ravine Accountability Act, is historic in nature. It brings awareness to something that happened to a mostly Latino Mexican-American community on the east side that most folks don't know about. And it's the first time that the state actually takes action in a larger conversation around justice, land, wealth, and the fact that these folks were denied an opportunity to come back to their community.
Did you purposely choose the bill number?
We were very intentional on having a historical representation on the bill, and so my staff, and I give it up to my ledge director, Natalie, who stood in line at the desk to be able to ensure that we got AB 1950 to start off this process. And yes, we were very intentional about the work.
Great. And tell me more, what does AB 1950 propose to do?
AB 1950 is threefold. So the Chavez-Ravine Accountability Act to ensure that we're representing the communities of Bishop La Loma and Palo Verde do three things. One, it creates a historical database that would ensure that the history of this community and the people that were impacted have access to a database that would allow for us to find descendants of these families. Two, it creates a task force that would ensure that we're able to work with the city of Los Angeles to bring in the appropriate people to figure out what potential compensation can look like. And that could be with current cost of that land or potential land elsewhere within the city of Los Angeles. And thirdly, and I think actually very significant, is a historical monument placed around the community now that actually tells the story of what happened to these three communities. There is a small plaque on a rock in the Elysian Valley area right now that calls for the recognition of this history, called Los Desterrados, the people that were displaced, that was actually started by family members and folks that had been displaced. So we want to build upon what's already been done and ensure that there's a legacy to justice and that folks know that this happened right around that time between the 1950s and the 1960s, and that there are still descendants and family members that know what happened and that still are hurt and should be seen and heard.
And it was your work with these descendants and people who experienced what had happened a half a century ago was the genesis for AB 1950 came about?
It's a catalyst for change. I first learned about what happened to these communities when I was in college studying Chicano studies at Cal State LA. And I couldn't believe that, you know, this had happened right in my own backyard. And through my work in the legislature, we have focused actually quite a bit on several injustices that have taken place on the east side, including the recognition of forced and unknowingly sterilized women, mostly Mexican-American, Latina, Spanish-speaking women at LA County General Hospital, as well as state institutions. And this is a part of part of the work related to justice. And I'm glad to be able to be working with now Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara, who is the sponsor of our bill, who has also represented the East Side in the legislature, who's proudly from East Los Angeles, and I'm from Boyle Heights in East LA, and working with the Somos Group, which is actually also founded in a work towards land and justice and bringing appropriate representation to individuals that have been wronged by historical practices of the past.
Right. And certainly your work in the area of social justice and equity is very well known here in California. Do you believe that AB 1950 can be a model for the state and the nation in developing a framework for redress and reparations?
AB 1950 can certainly be a model for what is possible. It's a model for looking back into our history so that we understand how policies of the past created incredible wrongs and what we are doing to address that type of injustice. But I think most importantly, what it brings about is the power of representation. The time of Los Angeles in the 1950s looked very different than what it looks like today, even when it comes to political representation and political power. The fact that, you know, I as a Latina immigrant woman who represents this community has the power through this office to be able to move the legislature to address wrongs of the past when it comes to land acquisition, eminent domain, the displacement of individuals, as well as the connection to the power of generational wealth through home ownership that has been denied to these communities, and the fact that I'm also working with the first LGBTQ constitutional officer in our state, with also from the east side, now Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara, as well as a homegrown organization at Somos, founded also by someone that I went to high school with in Boyle Heights. So we are all connected, and it was not intentional, but it really sets the tone of what is possible when community leadership comes from the bottom up and then has the opportunity to bring light issues related to injustice.
Can you also tell us, is there a fiscal cost to AB 1950? And given the current budget situation we find ourselves in California, how prudent would it be to put forward such legislation right now at this time?
Well, it is never the wrong time to do the right thing. And when it comes to funding issues related to justice, it seems that we can always have excuses as to why not do it, right? With a budget deficit or budget problems, you know, these are very real conversations, but it doesn't mean that we don't advance the conversation and advance public knowledge of what happened and what needs to happen next. Yes, there are costs associated with creating a task force. There will be costs associated to the city of Los Angeles if the task force moves forward with potential compensation to families or potential land acquisition for the families. But, you know, it's a conversation that continues to be ongoing. Budgets come up and down, right? And so if now is not the appropriate time, maybe at a later date it will be, and we will have done the groundwork necessary to be at a good start when we are at a better budget time.
Finally, how does AB 1950 serve as an example of the uniqueness to California as a model for innovative policies?
I think we are unique across any place in the state, right? We're such a beautiful, diverse, and huge state, home to 40 million people. You know, La Loma, Palo Verde, and Bishop are three communities in what we have now come to recognize as Chavez Ravine. But they are a slice of the American dream, of what can be possible, what was possible, and a dream that was taken away. And it's not a unique story in that it's history that has happened throughout various communities, but it is a very unique story that it is the story of a largely Mexican-American Latino community in the heart of Los Angeles that has for decades been a history that is unknown. And so through policy, through state policy, the legislature also gets to acknowledge its role in creating at the time housing policies statewide that impacted and allowed for the displacement of families and for eminent domain to take place, and that the city itself is responsible for what happened to these communities, and that we as policymakers get to bring that injustice to light. And hopefully, with the support of my colleagues in the Assembly, in the Senate, and through the governor's office, we're able to do a little bit of justice decades later.
Our thanks to Assemblywoman Wendy Carrillo. I'm Henry Lowe. Thank you for listening.
The Look West podcast is produced for the Assembly Democratic Caucus by the DCO Pod Squad. Please like, share, and subscribe to hear all the Look West episodes. A new episode of the Look West podcast drops on the third Thursday of every month. Thanks again for listening, and remember, when you think of California and politics, remember to look west.